meeting. Before we begin our regularly printed agenda, I would like to request that the board consider the possibility of a motion. What I'm suggesting is that we go to the meeting on Thursday, the 26th, with the other towns and the county, with a recommendation essentially in hand that I want to be clear about what I'm asking for, that we're request that the county have its staff look at the possibility of a waste transfer station, the feasibility from a technical point of view of a waste transfer station at the intersection of North Carolina 86 and Interstate 40. That's my suggestion.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of we're not endorsing that site or any particular course of action. We're just asking for the county staff to evaluate the technical feasibility of transfer station at that site.
And does that implicitly include the availability?
Yeah, I think, right, sort of the practical questions, and put it that way, about the possibility. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
Did
matter
Chapel
passing unanimously.
Pass that last
time? Chapel Hill Town Council met until 12:30 a.m. this morning, so they had a good conversation about landfill matters. It was not last night, it was this morning. And I had the privilege of being there. There was some interest in that. They didn't actually pass a resolution like we just did.
Thank you for doing that.
Let me just mention that I learned this morning that the owners of that property a few years ago had tried to sell it to the university as a possible park and ride lot. So at least at that point recently it was available.
Okay. That's interesting to know. Thanks. Yes.
Is it okay?
You go ahead and bring that up.
And on probably the lightest matter of the evening, there was a wonderful strategic planning meeting for the Arts Commission on Saturday. That was just great, and you'll be learning more about that later. But there was a request from the Carborough Yarn Bombers for a two-week extension on their on their project, because they've been working so very, very hard on it that they would like to have 4 weeks instead of 2 weeks. And so if it's okay with, yes.
And it's going to be the original installation for 4 weeks.
Yes.
Not sort of multiple
things. No. Okay. It's really neat. They're all excited because one of the members has a knitting machine, and so they're just going wild. Carver's going to look great for Valentine's Day. So I'd like to move that we grant a two-week extension to the yarn bombing project. Did
second.
I say that right? Thank you, Dan.
All right. Been moved and seconded. We had a little bit of discussion. I had a little bit of discussion earlier with the staff to just ensure that this doesn't raise any new issues. And it sounds like as long as the rest of it is happening according to what we've already agreed upon, that they were okay with that. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
This time that we're
all right, yeah, and now
yes.
I would like to recognize Annette Stone, our Economic Development Officer for the Town of Carborough.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm here this evening to discuss and to talk about an idea that has sort of evolved over the past couple of weeks, that on the wave of Love Town, and we weren't officially designated Love Town, but there's a ton of love in this town. Asking the board this evening to consider this resolution to declare February for the love of Carborough Month And along with this, we'll create a whole month full of events and specials and promote businesses for Carrboro. I've been working with WCHL, who has agreed to partner with us and match advertising dollars that we put in to do 45-30 second spots for the month of February. We'll do 2 half-page ads in the Carver Citizen, and we'll have events during the month. And the first official event is at the station, and it'll be February 14th at 7 p.m. It'll be the dating game, Carver style. And so I think it'll be a lot of fun, and we'll do similar type things for the whole month. We'll have specials advertised in the paper and on the radio for businesses, local businesses. So if I can quickly read the proclamation to you or the resolution and ask you all to consider it, is whereas the town of Carver was a location finalist for a show produced by the BBC and the Oprah Winfrey Network titled Lovetown, and whereas the community spirit that was exhibited by the lovers of Carver during the events that were held in support of Lovetown demonstrated the closeness, warmth, and caring nature that defines this community, and whereas the town's interest in participating in the show was to support local businesses and to build community spirit, and whereas the town continues to support local businesses through its economic and community development efforts, and whereas the Economic Sustainability Commission voted unanimously to recommend that the Board of Aldermen support for the Love of Carver Month, therefore be it now resolved that the Board of Aldermen declare February for the Love of Carver Month, and all Carver businesses are encouraged to join in for a collective promotion for the town and to support local businesses. So I ask you all to consider this this evening.
Thanks, Annette. Move the resolution.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
You're doing unanimously. You're doing some really cool things for Carver. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Item B1, a public hearing on a text amendment, water quality buffer requirements, et cetera.
That's why all these people are here, right?
This item is for a public hearing on a land use ordinance text amendment making technical corrections to water quality buffer requirements per action of the Environmental Management Commission on July 14th, 2011. I believe Trish has a few words.
Slides to share with you this evening. Good evening. Happy New Year. Welcome back. There was an activity that was left out of the final edits to the Jordan Rules, the table of exempt and allowable activities, when it was adopted in 2008. And the item has been restored by the action of the EMC, the Environmental Management Commission, and the Rules Review Committee this past summer. The town was notified of these changes and the need to amend our buffer ordinance provisions in this regard, and the need for us to submit those changes to the state by March 1st. The draft ordinance includes two additional changes to Article 16 of the Land Use Ordinance, and the board needs to hold a public hearing on these on this item before taking action, as is typical with text amendments. So the draft ordinance addresses the required change. It adds as an exempt use the drainage of a pond located in a natural drainage way, provided that a new riparian buffer, in accordance with the water quality buffer requirements, is established adjacent to the channel. It also clarifies that ponds which are not located in natural drainage ways are not subject to the buffer requirements that we put in place as a result of the Jordan Rules and the revisions to our buffer requirements a couple of years ago. It repeals language that we have had in our ordinance for many years and that we carried over into the Jordan provisions out of that familiarity with the language, but in working with those rules since they've been adopted, we find that it isn't a very good fit, and the language really isn't needed, and so we're proposing that it be repealed. We're adding a new section. This is a language dealing with existing lots and how buffers apply to development on those lots. This ordinance also adds a new section that seeks to recognize the drainage benefits of ponds, even if they're located outside of natural drainage ways, and provides for the review of removal of those ponds if that's proposed. whenever upon it, a development or that activity would not be otherwise subject to 15263, which is the stormwater management requirements of the ordinance. The draft ordinance also has standard provisions about effective date of the ordinance and repeal of conflicting provisions. The Planning Board has reviewed the ordinance and recommended one change to the ordinance. We've made that change. Otherwise, have recommended approval. The EAB is scheduled to review on February 2nd, and we have provided a resolution that would continue the hearing tonight to February 21st for that to take place. Orange County found no inconsistency of the change with the Joint Planning Land Use Plan, and the staff's recommendation is for adoption of the ordinance finding consistency, the resolution finding consistency and the draft ordinance. I'm happy to try and answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, I just have one question. Trish, on MLK property, the park, there used to be a pond. My understanding is in part to mitigate not being able to remove the pond because of these rules, it was moved. I'm curious as to what it would have meant with this change. Does this mean that there would have had to be a buffer around the drainage that is currently there? And if so, how big of a buffer would that be?
Well, that would depend on the type of stream it is, and I'm not sure whether it's an intermittent or, I'm not sure exactly the classification, because we have mapped streams that are buffered as a result of Jordan rules, and then mm-hmm. other, so it depends. We could find it out for you.
Okay.
But that is the case. It would if it were, it is within a natural drainage way, and in order to remove it under this provision, it would have required the establishment of a buffer.
I would be curious to know. And the other question, it's not so specific to this, because, I don't know, maybe it is. But we recently reviewed a property, and there were questions on, because it's commercially zoned, the buffer rules didn't apply as much. And I was hoping that we could look into that, because I find that to be problematic.
Okay.
Is that right? If that's mm-hmm. in agreement with the rest of the board?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Sure. You're welcome.
Trish, is this a case where do we technically need to move the motion of consistency before the resolution with the amendment? Is that correct?
Yes.
Or,
I mean,
does
the,
that matter?
No.
Because they're in the other order in the packet. Usually we do the resolution of consistency first.
I think we provided the resolution setting the public hearing, continuing the hearing as the first resolution.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
But
okay, that's right. That's what's confusing.
Right.
And then the consistency and the ordinance.
So we wouldn't do the other things until the 21st.
And why do we need to continue the public hearing?
To allow the EAB an opportunity to review.
Oh, okay.
And that's your choice. I mean, you did refer it to them, so.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
I'd like to move that we continue this hearing until the 21st of February in order to give the Environmental Advisory Board time to review and give input.
Second.
All right. It's been moved. Is there a second?
A second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? No, passes unanimously. All right. That brings us to item B2, a request for a conditional use permit for restaurant with outside service consumption, Looking Glass Cafe.
James Thomas from the Planning Department has a short presentation.
James, hold on a second.
This is a conditional use permit, so of course it's quasi-judicial, so everybody's going to, all the witnesses will be sworn as usual.
The evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge.
Good evening. Tonight we're here to discuss the Looking Glass. Many of you are aware of this restaurant, which has been where it is today at 601 West Main Street since about January of 2009. The situation for tonight is actually they intend to expand into the old Cycle 9 area and in essence be surpassing the 1,500 square feet threshold, which within the B1G zoning district requires a conditional use permit. So that's why we're here tonight. This is the property in question here, and we are not too far. We're right down here. So, as I stated, this is the site plan. Once again, here's a cycle 9. This is where they are existing. There is a architectural firm in the rear. I believe they have about 5 or 6 employees at work from Monday through Friday. So in the evening, obviously, the parking is open just for the looking glass. Like I said, it's a B1G zoning district. This is a non-conforming use, and they are asking for relief from several things, and I will just briefly go over those. One of those is the parking requirements. On the land use ordinance, it would require 60 spaces. We propose to have basically 36 spaces, and then it would be an additional 14 spaces for the outside seating. But with the bike rack, it would bump it down one space requirement. So they are asking for relief from the parking requirements. This is kind of, I'll just go quickly over this. This is basically dealing with the nonconformity. The applicant is, once again, asking for relief from paving of the total parking lot. The second request would be to not install the 10-foot sidewalks along West Main Street, Poplar Avenue. There presently is sidewalks on both of those. I believe they're 4 or 5 foot wide sidewalks. The third would be they're asking relief from the screening requirements. And then the fourth would be the actual 20% shading requirements in the parking lot. There has been, I just want to point this out, Board of Aldermen does have the ability to place hours on the use, hours of operation. And today I did receive a letter from an adjacent property owner, and I think Kathy forwarded that to you by email. And one of his comments was the hours of operation.
Have you had any conversation with the applicant in regard to that question, whether...
No, I have not personally, no.
Thanks.
And... In the first photo, the aerial one, is so the houses, that person's house is right there.
Yes. Okay. Yep. And the applicant did not actually hold a neighborhood meeting, but they sent out letters kind of explaining the situation, what they intend to do to everybody within 1,000 feet.
Okay. Thanks.
So... This did. This actually went to the advisory boards earlier this month. I'm just gonna. Only two boards had any type of comments. Planning board. They did have a recommendation dealing with the hours of operation, and then the transportation advisory board had several comments dealing with thinking that the parking requirement was excessive. They had some. The bike parking and dealing with the actual vertical trellis. This did actually come up on the advisory boards. And my understanding is there's this trellis right here, which actually kind of hides the recycling and garbage bin. I guess people backing out, they're kind of hard to see that trellis there. These are the recommendations. Staff is in favor of granting the applicant relief from the four requests for the nonconformities. And then we added two additional ones. That would be the demarcation of the parking spots and then paving of the entrances to be 15 feet back from the edge of the street right-of-way. The applicant is here this evening, and also the property owner. If you guys have any questions of me, try to answer them. If you have any more specific questions,
are they making a presentation, the applicant? Or?
Property owner?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't believe so, no.
We have asked you.
Okay.
All right.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Okay. Well, Ken Friedland, is that you?
Friedland, yes.
Friedland. All right. Well, why don't you come up and speak?
You solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge.
I do.
Thank you.
Thank you, and good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the board. I'm actually here in three capacities tonight. As Ken Friedline and Ellen Weinstein and I are owners of the property at 601 West Main Street. We're also tenants in the property with our architecture firm, Weinstein Friedline Architects. That also makes us landlords to, I'm happy to say, Looking Glass Cafe. Carolyn Griggs is here. We're very glad to have had her in the building with us since we bought the property and improved it so we could keep it in use at the end of 2008 and 2009. The first thing I want to do is just thank the board and the advisory boards and the staff for helping us get this in front of you. This property has been really, the space that Cycle 9 vacated has been unusable and unproductive for 5 months now while we've gone through the process, and I understand and respect the process. But we're anxious to get going and appreciate everybody's efforts to bring it to you this month rather than next month or the month after. We truly mean that. I understand these processes. I make my living dealing with them. And that's the third capacity. I'm here in front of you because I helped Carolyn and her mother, Susan, prepare the application for you and make the discussion to the points that we thought we could meet and the points that we are asking you to allow us to continue to use the building in its nonconforming uses. The one I particularly want to talk to tonight was the question of hours of operation, and it is something that came up before the planning board, and I regret that it didn't occur to me to speak to it then. But the question came up about limiting hours of operation, and Carolyn, who runs a coffee shop and starts very early in the morning, said, "I don't have any desire to be there past 10 o'clock," and that became sort of the limit that was embraced. And I understand Carolyn's point of view there, but I wanted to say that as a property owner who's been through this process to try to get a conditional use for a legitimate B1G business, to ask you to consider whether or not that is really what a restaurant might be doing, and a restaurant that might do two seatings might have trouble closing at 10 o'clock on a weeknight if they're doing two seatings. So, again, the process takes time, and when there is a change of use or a change of owner, we would like to advantage ourselves as best we can to be able to put that space back into use. So I don't have a suggestion for you about whether it should be 10 or 11 or 11:30 on weeknights. There is a provision that it be allowed to go longer, a few times a year, 6 I believe, for special events, which Carolyn has, and I think many of you have been to. But I just wanted to speak to that to say it's a real limitation, and I thought in retrospect, and I didn't speak to it the other night, a little bit more restrictive than I think a business like that should have to operate on. I'm glad to answer any questions about that or anything.
The planning board's comment recorded here was 10 o'clock on weeknights and 11 on weekends.
It was.
So that's a little less restrictive, but do you still think that's potentially too restrictive for restaurant 11 on weekends?
Well, I was thinking of the 10 on the weeknights, and I'm thinking of restaurants. If that were, heaven forbid, Carolyn, if that were to become a restaurant that wanted to do two dinner seatings and not start at 6:30 in the morning, that obviously we could come back and ask for a change to CUP. Obviously we could. But again, I'm thinking about the time that it takes to do those things and just trying to get the best advantage we can.
But would you be agreeable to the condition suggested by the planning board if that's something the board wanted, that we wanted
I would agree to any yes I could get. I thought that 10 was too restrictive.
Okay.
I regret that I didn't speak to it at the time, but I was so grateful that Carolyn was so willing to do it.
I can tell you.
So, second thoughts. I'm sorry.
I can tell you do this for a living. Go ahead, Jack.
As you know, the property abuts a neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and people live there, and they are there all day, and they're there all night, and their children are there. My two concerns are one, noise. I don't think that people... I think if you move next to someplace that's already noisy, you chose to live there. But if noise moves in next to you when you've been there for a while, that's just not quite fair, and it can diminish your property value as well. My other concern is that if you don't have enough parking, that people will be parking along the street and taking people's, you know, like blocking people's driveways, making the road hard to get into. What assurances could you give your neighbors that when they put their five-year-old to bed on a Wednesday night, that they're not going to be subject to loud music or to loud people in the summertime sitting outside? How will you be a good neighbor to these people?
Well, the applicant has agreed to the good neighbor provisions, and that's on the cover sheet of the application now, so that refers to noise, dust, vibration, and all of those things. We're going to demark the parking lot to make it more orderly. And I believe Carolyn has spoken about no amplified music. Now, again, I'm not the user of the space, but I understand your concern. But she doesn't do amplified music, and as six times a year or so would do a special event that went on longer. But that's and we're very quiet in our practice.
I know you wild architects. I'm not seeing this.
Let's be clear about this. I mean, she said she doesn't do amplified music, but is that somewhere in this? Is that a term of this permit?
It was not. It was spoken about at the planning board, and the planning board's response to it was hours of limitation, and it's not specifically spoken to now.
Could it be, Mr. Attorney?
Yes.
Okay. That's the shortest answer you've ever given. I'm sorry. I just wasn't prepared for it.
I can go on.
No. I'm not being critical.
You know, I somehow do not have the documents that are being referred to.
Is that good, neighbor?
I would also point out, to say, that this is a building that's been a business place in Carver since 1936, when the first piece was built.
Yes.
And it's been in the original B1G zoning district. And when we took the building over, there was actually a fair amount of industrial activity that was going on in the side yard and the backyard. There was grinding of door frames and spray painting, and there were pallets, and there were exposed dumpsters and things. So we actually think and hope that we've increased property values and contributed to that. We'd like to keep that up.
There's a difference between having grinding going on during the day and having loud noise at night.
Mm-hmm.
There's a definite difference. I do not have the documents. I don't have the good neighbor letter.
Do you have that, Ken?
And I don't have the only recommendation I have from the planning board is just to approve this is a good business.
It's in the discussion of the joint planning.
The notation,
which is earlier in the packet.
Sorry.
It's right here.
Page 7.
The notation about the good neighbor agreement is note 3 on the site plan, I believe.
It's not a letter, a cover letter.
No, the request, the comment from
the looking for the good neighbor thing.
Put that on the site plan.
I'm looking for the good neighbor. I don't think we'll have.
So that's page A2. It's page A2.
A2.
Oh, no, that's the letter to neighbors. I'm sorry.
I don't.
The letter to neighbors was the contact with the neighbors.
Page 2, information provided to neighbors is the text of a letter from Carolyn to 1,000-foot property.
Oh, it's in teeny tiny print?
That's the one.
It's the one in teeny tiny print.
That's 3 on page A3.
Thank you.
voice team. It's not operating.
I just see the information provided to the
Oh, yeah, there it is, on page A3, in really tiny print.
Really tiny print.
Good neighbor performance standards for non-residential uses. Yeah, I'm amazed I can read.
It's right there.
It's over your
it's
head.
It's right there.
Oh.
So it's me.
That's what I get for having a seat.
Yes, Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the point. I mean, I'm not saying this to dismiss the concerns about the effect on the neighbors, but the addition of inside space is not going to affect the noise for neighbors, regardless of the hours, and is not going to affect anything except potentially parking if we thought that was too much. So I just, you know, I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about that issue, but I think we need to be clear that the change that's being requested is not going to have, you know, we're still going to have, if they weren't coming and doing this, we wouldn't have any restriction on music or on hours because we don't have that current law.
So it's in, it will all be inside. The music will be inside.
There's no change in any activity at Looking Glass except the dining, the placement of dining, 15 tables and 45 chairs in an inside space.
And that could actually have the effect of keeping more people inside rather than outside.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that you're in favor of not having a time restriction? I would be in favor of not having a time restriction.
Lydia?
I have a couple of comments. And thanks, Dan, for making that point. One is, with regard to the time restriction, as someone who's left these meetings a lot trying to find somewhere to go eat, everywhere kind of shuts down at 10 o'clock, honestly. I just thought I'd throw out that point. There's nowhere that you can get in before even 9 or 9:30 at a lot of them. So I just, it wouldn't be the end of the world, I don't think, if we had a time restriction. But the second question I have is, I was looking for some email that I thought we received this afternoon from someone asking a question about how, if this was, if this zoning use could end up in a future use that might be beyond what it is, a nightclub or something. Did one of y'all receive those?
And that's also in the staff report that this would not preclude, like once this is passed, it would not preclude a nightclub or a bar, and of course that has entirely, and especially since we're being asked not to have hours restrictions, that could be intense.
So, Mr. Attorney, if I can just follow
up. That was my question, because I don't have that email.
Mr. Attorney, what does that really mean, potentially, in terms of the kind of uses that could be? I mean, what's a nightclub? I mean, is the Cat's Cradle a nightclub, or?
I'd have to go look at the ordinance to see whether there's a separate classification. Marty, you'd have to help me out.
Sure. Yes, the Cat's Cradle would be considered a nightclub. They're all...
Don't lie about that.
I swear the Cat's Cradle is
a nightclub.
Yes.
The Cat's Cradle is a nightclub, officially on the record now. Broadly speaking, they all fall under Category 8, which includes restaurants, bars, and nightclubs. So something like Orange County Social Club would be considered a bar, Cat's Cradle probably a nightclub, and then Looking Glass, a cafe or restaurant type space. But broadly speaking, they're all under Category 8, and it would mean that if, as Mr. Friedline suggests, Looking Glass were to leave, something like that could move in without coming back to see you. So that's why it's up for discussion, I think.
Brian, so I guess that possibility, even if it's kind of a remote one, is what concerns me about the question of amplified music, because even indoor amplified music can really be quite loud outdoors, and you know this. Which is fine for where the Cradle is, because they're in the middle of a commercial district. You know, this is the edge of a commercial district, and so that that's why I have some reservations about that. But that doesn't, that doesn't, I mean, but I think there's a way we could address that and still, still grant.
Haven't they already agreed no amplified music?
Well, but it's not in the, not in the permit, though. That's the thing.
So limited hours.
They're saying that, but what holds them to it is my, because I mean, I'm not saying you would lie to me, Ken, but one day you'll sell this building and the next person will inherit your permit and they're going to say, well, I'm not bound by what Ken said.
Some wild New Yorker will come in. Who knows what they'll do. Yeah.
Mark, are we talking about adding conditions? So that we'll have a condition for amplified.
Well, I'm just trying to clarify what the issue is, but we'll get to how to deal with it in a little bit.
So would the condition be to limit the hours of operation or the hours in which amplified music?
Both.
Well, it's from my perspective, it's mostly about the amplified music aspect of it rather than the hours. But anyway, look, are there any other issues that people want to?
I've got another question. I was looking. Can we look at this more?
Can we zoom back down?
See it. And looking at the parking lot, and I understand like there's a lot of parking, and there's very little opportunity for shading. But I do notice there's that little corner right there at the edge of the paved, and you know this is Tree City. USA,
so what about it?
If we could include a tree there, that would be a nice thing. And it would be, you know, a lot of shade. I'm not saying it's a requirement, but I do hope you can consider that.
I would just like to comment, we didn't do a shading study. It came up, I wasn't prepared for it and hadn't planned for it, didn't realize that was going to be an issue. This is a remarkably well-shaded existing parking lot. The sun starts out over here and comes around here and sets over there. These are existing trees, they're quite large and protected by the new construction. There is a spot, I mean, even say some shade gets to here, that spot is bare, and somebody suggested, why don't we take one of those parking places that's a little problematic and put a tree there. But that's where I would tend to go with shading, if that's what was needed. But when we took the building over, we actually removed asphalt from this building because there was a lot of asphalt up to doors. And so we took this tree and we made a garden here. And we're quite aware, and being in the back, we're quite aware of how much shade there is. And I regret that we didn't do a shading study, didn't realize we needed to. It's very difficult to do. There is a buffer that's been built back here when 601 was, 605 was built. Those trees will mature over time, but they're slow growing. Mm-hmm. And of course, there is shade that comes from that building on these spots in the evening. Those spots up there next to the tall building, the four-story building next door.
Okay. Is there anybody else here who would like to address the Board of Aldermen about this issue? Okay. What's the sequence of events here?
I think we need to agree with the applicant on the conditions. And there's one condition that we want, which is no amplified music, which I believe we heard them say they agree. And then the other question is, do we want a limitation on hours? And if so, I mean, I don't know if there's some way of thinking about outdoor hours versus indoor hours, maybe, because I think people go outside
right.
as they're there. Right? So I know I will.
Okay, so was there agreement from the applicant on the condition about amplified music, about the possibility of a condition on amplified music?
Yeah, I'm
she has to come up. You have to come up and get sworn.
Solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge. Thank you.
Yeah, so we can limit the outdoor or amplified music. Most of the events that we've had that required amplified music were for charity events. We've done, like, the Sunburst Project and Leukemia, Lymphoma, and then also the Carborough Music Festival is our biggest and noisiest event, but then again, that's during the day. I'm fine with limiting any amplified music. We don't really do a whole lot anyway unless there's special circumstances, which the 6 per year would suit us fine. And I'm fine with limiting hours to 11 or midnight or whatever the neighborhood thinks. You know, I, of course, want to be a good neighbor, so if anybody ever would have a problem, I can certainly personally pull the plug.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Did you get, I know you sent out the letter, did you get feedback from any neighbors in response to that?
Nothing written, nothing to us at all.
No one said anything about it?
Nope.
We went by. We just
walked
across the street. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah,
do you,
today.
Do you swear that you're walking across the street?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
Carolyn, did you see this that we got today from your next-door neighbor in back?
In back, no.
Yeah, Mr. Robert.
I haven't heard anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it sounds like we want to limit the amplified noise. I would be in favor of not limiting the time for it being open. If we could do those separately.
Well, why don't you say 11 or 12, like she just suggested? And I mean, to me, that's
for close.
Sure. I mean, that's fine too.
What the suggestion was that there. Well, one suggestion was that there be a difference between weekday and weeknight.
It's 10 p.m. on weekdays and 11 on weekends.
And mm-hmm. And is Friday considered
a weekend
night?
Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. Friday and Saturday, okay.
So why don't we bump that to 11 and 12?
Is that, I'm sort of wondering, is that necessary? Like,
that would work well with us just because of the few charity events that we do have. You know, we usually have music to sort of encourage people to add donations because of the music or the bands that we've had. So limiting it to midnight, Friday and Saturday night, would be great for those certain events. However, on the regular, we do not have live music.
So we could say 11 other than special events.
Yeah.
Can I say that's the kind of response I was looking for, nothing more?
Yeah. Hey, thanks.
Okay.
Rachel Beth is...
Yeah,
Rachel, did you want to add to...
Well, Rachel, you had to be sworn, though, so come up. Well, is it just a question?
Well, I just wanted to put out a suggestion.
Well, then come
then
be sworn.
Come up.
Hi. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
I was just wondering if it'd be okay to limit the acoustic... I mean, limit it to acoustic in the evenings outside. Because when it's amplified outside, we can hear it all down the street the few times, so I didn't know if that's possible.
Sure. Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
So there would be, for instance, 12 o'clock, you know, not having amplified music at 12 o'clock on the weekends or something would be
very acceptable.
Okay.
I think what we're discussing right now accommodates that interest, except that what she's suggesting is that they would be able to have up to 6 special events per year. So there might be as many as 6 nights when it would be amplified.
So that'd be just the special events, that
right? Yeah, we do a lot of charity events,
like the music festival and that kind of.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I know some neighbors had been talking, and so we're trying to.
Good.
Okay.
All right.
And in fact, I don't think we've ever had amplified music outside except for the Carver Music Festival and the few charity events that we've had, but that was during the day. I think they cut out at about 8 because we have
some,
a very minor stage.
Yes, on the side.
Yeah, and with one power outlet. So yeah. There's really not a whole lot that we can do anyway. And I think
that's
the few
true.
Charity events that we've had that have gone a little later and a little louder have been inside.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Thanks.
I think we understand the issue. Okay.
Okay. So we have a condition 6 which is no amplified music except for during special events. And we have a condition 7.
Up to 6 special events.
For up to 6 special events. And condition 7, which would state that the hours would be limited to 11 p.m. on weeknights and 12 p.m. on weekends.
Okay.
What about
12 a.m.
Maybe whoever was at this, maybe Sammy or someone could speak to this. What about TAB's request for covered bike parking or more bike spaces?
Yeah, does the applicant have a response to those concerns from the Transportation Advisory Board? They have expressed wanting more biking spaces. Also, there was a concern for the quality of the bike parking. There's a lot of bike racks. I mean, the two big ones. The concern they had was that those bike racks, you can't really put your wheel through, so they're not really as functional as other kinds of bike racks. So the question of whether you'd be willing to have inverted U or post-and-loop bike rack design.
We'll work with Carolyn on getting more bike racks. What I said at the meeting was we'll look at this. There might be an awning over the door that we go to the bike shop. There's also an overhang in the roof that would provide a spot for 2 or 3 bikes under cover, which I haven't had a chance to suggest to Carolyn. She considers covered bike parking. I see a couple of opportunities there. And more bike racks, I think.
Okay. If we could just include that as condition 8.
Mm-hmm. To specifically say what?
Specifically that more inverted U or post and loop bike racks will be included. Is that what you agree with?
So just to say some. That the issue will be addressed to some degree.
And that at least 3 covered bike spots.
All right. That sounds reasonable. If this was a brand new building going up, there'd be a lot more opportunity to kind of push this issue. But there's only the building is what it is. So.
Learn from. I can't think of any bike racks that are covered.
We'll get you some information about that. There are some.
Yeah, and to that point, we also talked about in the Transportation Advisory Board if planning could provide to applicants examples of like what covered bike looks like, and also recommended bike racks. I think that would be useful. Every time the Transportation Advisory Board wouldn't have to explain
that.
Yeah,
this does seem to come up just about every town to one degree or another. All right.
Are we ready to vote?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Does this have a resolution?
Yeah, we have a worksheet.
Okay. All right. Start working on the worksheet.
Okay, move that the application is complete.
Second.
Been moved and seconded that we find the application complete. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Move that the application complies with the land use ordinance.
Second. Been moved and seconded that it complies with the ordinance requirements. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Move that the application will be subject to the conditions and item 1 on the worksheet, as well as conditions 1 through 5 of the staff and 6 through 8 added this evening.
All right. Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
Move that the application is granted.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we grant the application subject to conditions. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously.
All right,
good luck.
Have fun.
Good luck. Thanks.
All right. The next item on our agenda is a continued public hearing on land use ordinance map amendment related to 4 properties at and near 500 North Greensboro Street. Since
since we just did a sworn hearing for a permit application, let me point out to the public that the last item was a permit application as opposed to a rezoning. This item of rezoning is treated differently under North Carolina law, so we will not have to be sworn for the purposes of this hearing. In, just in case you wonder why all those people got sworn in, it's because there was a permit as opposed to a zoning decision. At some, if the zoning rezoning is granted tonight, then at some later date there would presumably be a permit hearing, which will be sworn or would be sworn on this property. But for tonight, we're considering only the zoning question.
But you still have to tell the truth.
We would much prefer not to make our decision based on lies. All right. Staff.
The petitioner for the rezoning request is the property owners and contract purchaser. The four lots are located on North Greensboro Street near Shelton Street. The requested action is to rezone this property to B1G CZ, which is a conditional zoning district. This is a legislative zoning decision, as the mayor just indicated, and this is a continuation of a public hearing that started on June 14th and was continued to September 27th and November 15th before this evening. There was an accompanying text amendment to allow a condition on B1G CZ zoning districts, such that additional residential density could be granted in conjunction with specified conditions dealing with a vibrant and successful community. And that amendment was approved on November 15th. Just quickly, the location of the property, they're outlined in bold in this slide, and in blue, the location of the property on this slide. The application materials consisted of a Town of Carborough petition for a map amendment, concept plan, and proposed conditions. There are two buildings proposed on the property in the concept plan, and the proposal has been modified since the last public hearing. The first building, the front building, is two stories of non-residential, proposed for non-residential uses, and the rear building is a four-story building with 96 residential units. There is parking under approximately one-half of the rear building, the residential building. And this is the updated concept plan for the property showing its the location of the two buildings along North Greensboro Street here. The two-story building and the four-story building in the rear, and then parking here and underneath. Excuse me. This concept plan also was modified with regard to the street improvements as a result of changing the proposed uses, reducing the taking away the third story on the front building and reducing the number of residential units. There, the traffic impact analysis was prepared and submitted to DOT, and DOT concurred with the traffic engineer's assessment that road widening, that is to say, the creation of a turn lane on the north and southbound approaches to the driveway for the site, would not be required. This is the existing streetscape, pretty much looking out from the northwest corner of, the southwest corner of Shelton Street, looking across to the east. The board did request some information on November 15th that a general comment about that notification of such requests as this for go out to neighbors in the community sooner, and that be something that be incorporated with future developments. Also, that the developer consider creative ways to create more access to commercial space in the back of the proposed development. The information was also requested that the developer consider converting Parker Street to a one-way street and explore the possibility of decreasing the Shelton Street left-turn storage, and that traffic improvements have more of a narrow profile. In addition, that the developer look into reducing traffic improvement impacts and consider alternate ingress and egress to the site. The developer consider the public comments related to traffic improvement impacts and the scale of the project, and that the board consider whether this density is appropriate for this location at this time. that's not excerpted from the minutes for the November 15th meeting, which those minutes and the minutes from the previous hearings were attached to the agenda item. The context map shows activities within, or excuse me, building footprints within 1/4 mile radius of the site. The buildings shown in blue at the center are the proposed buildings at 500 North Greensboro Street and the other three lots in this rezoning request. I do have images that were shared at the last meeting for you to look at if you'd like. I wasn't planning to go through them unless you want to see them, so we can, it's up to you.
I'd like you to go through them quickly.
Please. Okay. So this is just an assessment of the Lloyd Street and Greensboro Street CT zoning districts. The zoning districts, the CT are shown in pretty much in gray, the medium gray on the slide here in this location. And then in blue, with the exception of the lot located here, which is zone B1 GCZ as of 2010, and this lot, which is zoned M1. This is looking towards the property southeast, and then looking to the really more to the south towards Harris Teeter. Looking at the rear of the Fitch property, or excuse me, the Southern States property. This is looking from the railroad tracks to the east towards Lloyd Street. And then looking behind the building, so sort of parallel to the railroad tracks on the east side of the railroad tracks. This is one of the projects that was built in the CT zoning district in the past 10 years. This is looking down Lloyd Street from the south to the north. The CT zoning district is ahead. This is actually to the left. It's zone B1. I think it's zone B1C. So the frontage of the project we just saw from the side in the CT, and then a little bit wider angle view of that, and then from across the street a little further. And then this is the most recent project built in the CT zoning district here. Just a few images of its interaction with the neighboring properties. So this is looking further down the street towards the Piedmont Health building. So again, this is pretty much the bottom of Lloyd Street. It's Piedmont Health on the left and the Clay Center, which is an educational use located in the R75 zoning district. And looking back south or up the street. This is over switching over to North Greensboro Street's existing conditions. This is right where Parker Street comes in, so Southern States is just to the right. And then this is the property. This is 500 North Greensboro Street right here, and this is 404 North Greensboro Street with the other two lots lying behind. Looking straight across from the Shelton Street intersection, a little bit from the north, looking to the south, back towards that same house, and then just a little further to the north, looking towards the site. And then just a view of some surrounding structures lying to the north. This is looking right at the intersection of Shelton and North Greensboro Street. And then looking to the south. There, and now back to the north.
Thank you.
Sure.
That was a good reminder.
So the staff has identified some benefits and limitations of this proposed rezoning. The limitations include the projected level of service at the drive entrance, the mix of uses, which has been alleviated largely due to the increase in non-residential uses on the property, and then the project scale and placement in relation to the character of nearby development. There are also issues that are not addressed by the plan, that are not cannot be addressed with the type of information that we have in front of us, and that is the downtown architectural standards, the off-street parking requirements, and the evaluation of traffic impacts, things that need to happen through the conditional use permit review and public hearing. In the previous hearing, the staff noted that the technical, formal, and specific approval beyond the concept plan can occur presently and has to occur in the conditional, in the context of a conditional use permit for the type of development that's under review and being discussed at this point. However, due to the level of detail that has been provided, approval of the map amendment would effectively and practically express support for this proposed development. In considering this point further, since that hearing in November, the staff felt that there was a need to make this point clear in proposed conditions if the board decided to go forward and approve this requested rezoning. And so the wording of condition number 3 was revised to note the limitations of the site plan and the areas of the project that would be open for review later on. We have modified this illustration, which we prepared for a previous meeting, to remove the third story. The building is located about 15 feet behind the existing sidewalk and is just a box based on the earlier rendering provided by the petitioner. So just an update on the conditions. There are 12 included in the draft ordinance you have in your packets. The location map and concept plan would be part of the draft ordinance, and the petitioner has agreed to the conditions that have been spelled out so far. So there are 12 that are included. 10 are virtually as they were presented in November, but there are 3 changes to note. Condition number 3 has been revised in reference to the comment made just a moment ago, and in which a statement that the site plan is incorporated as part of the rezoning in relation to possible land uses, general location, and expected size of building footprints, but that other aspects of other features of the development, other components of the proposal would remain to be decided at the point a conditional use permit was reviewed and approved. Condition number 5 has been revised to reflect the contribution of 20% affordable units, 10% at less than 60, 10% at less than 80. Condition 12 has been revised in conjunction with 3 to reflect the same aspect of the need to delay approval of certain parts of the site plan until a conditional use permit, and this is in regard to the location of the building and its proximity to the street. And I can link to the ordinance as well, just to run through the wording of those if you have a question about them. The actual wording. So, there is a part of the draft ordinance that was adopted in November, this connection between the approval of additional residential density and site and building elements that are considered to be, these are ones that were included in the ordinance when it was adopted. It's not a requirement to select any of them. It is desire that at least that some of the conditions be selected from at least 3 of the following 7 areas that were described in the ordinance, and those areas are stormwater management, water conservation, energy production, alternative transportation, affordable housing, public art, and public amenities. And the conditions that appear to apply, appear to fit into these categories, are conditions 2, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, and 11, and they fall in the categories noted here in green. So stormwater management, water conservation, energy production, alternative transportation, and affordable housing.
Okay.
The recommendation is that the board consider the concept plan, the petition, and the public hearing comments, and could find that the limitations as presently designed do not advance the public interest and either request additional information or a modification to the proposal or deny requested rezoning, or find otherwise and act in favor of the requested rezoning. In either case, the board, if the board chooses to act on the actual petition, there is the need to adopt a consistency resolution prior to doing either. Happy to try and answer any questions.
Why don't we, the applicant have a presentation? Okay. Why don't we hear that now?
First of all, I want to thank the mayor and members of the board and staff and all the consultants and neighbors and advisory boards and everyone who's put input into this project. We've been working on it for a very long time, and I think we've done a good job trying to listen to people and have a willingness to take consideration and try to adjust the plan to come to where we are today. So I'd like to go through just briefly a few things that we've done just to highlight where we started and where we wind up today. And talk about some of the benefits of the project. And then if there are additional concerns or questions that arise, I'd like to reserve the ability to come back and answer those at a later time. I live in Carborough. My kids go to school here. My company is in Durham. I do a bunch of urban infill redevelopment, mostly historic rehab, and I've been driving by the site for probably 5 or 6 years now. And one of the things why we pursued looking at the site and trying to redevelop it was that we really felt it checked many of the boxes, not just because we pulled out the 2020 vision plan and tried to figure out where is there a site that does that, but it's something as a company that we've done that we try to work with the community and come up with projects that have a lot of benefits. While the project may not be perfect, we think the benefits outweigh some of the concerns, and we've done a lot to address those. So we're a firm believer in diverse and affordable housing. It's a very needed piece of the market, not only in Carborough, but in a lot of other places, given the housing downturn. We heard loud and clear that there was a need to increase the commercial tax base, and we've done that. We've actually doubled it from where we started. We're going to pursue a LEED building design, which is similar to what the town of Carborough did with the fire station on the Homestead property up on Homestead. We try to work in places where there's access to public transportation, bike, pedestrian, a walkable environment, and we think this has a lot of key resources that are close, not only from a retail standpoint, but potentially for employment. We try to put infill development that utilizes existing capacity. There's a lot of money that's been spent over the past, 20, 30, 50 years to put infrastructure in place, and putting development where there is existing infrastructure versus out in greenfield sites is just something that we like to pursue. We think a diversity of uses are really important. Diversity of incomes, diversity of people, diversity of uses really make a much more sustainable development, because when one market is up, the next market is down. And we try to locate density near transit corridors and things like that. So we didn't kind of fall into this. It just happened to be a site that we were able to execute something that we felt was really, really important. This is probably the most important side. I'd like to just take a couple minutes talking about this. On the far right-hand side is where we started almost a year ago today. We've had a number of information meetings, publicized, had public hearings. This is our fourth public hearing. We've talked about the text amendment and the map amendment. So what I'd like to demonstrate is that we've heard the neighbors loud and clear. We've actually heard the board loud and clear. We've actually reduced the scale of the project significantly. We're the front buildings we've actually reduced to a level that is less than what is current by right at that location. We are able to push the building back from to address kind of the scale and character, so that when you look at the pictures that Trish showed, when you're coming down, that the building will actually be set back even with some of the adjoining properties. I think one of the important things on the bottom is talk about the transportation improvements. I think everyone was pleased that after some additional work after the last public hearing on November 15th, we actually went out, did some additional traffic studies, did some additional analysis, and by reducing the scope and really working hard with DOT and staff, have been able to eliminate the need for turn lanes and be able to address some of the concerns that the neighbors had about getting into their front yards. And I think DOT recognized, and we did, that there just were kind of physical constraints to putting improvements there. So in response to that, we've kind of shrunk things down. On the commercial uses, you see that we've doubled the commercial space. We've made a firm commitment to the affordable housing. We're actually exceeding what the requirements are. There's been concerns about student housing, and this is going to be, you know, just a big student housing complex, people partying all the time. We don't develop student housing. That's not what we do. The financing we're using does not allow it. And we think we've put some pretty clever restrictions and conditions that Trish mentioned in those 12 categories that really eliminate the appeal of these units to students. So we started out meeting with all the advisory boards and getting staff input and neighbor input. We started out with a list of 36 conditions that we've condensed down to these 12 that, based on the matrix that Trish put together and we worked on together, we think we covered just about all of those. The only one we weren't able to meet was talking about solar shading, and it's not really applicable here because we're not on the, where it's not applicable is a technical issue about where the public right-of-way is. So the only one thing that we're not really agreeing with is something that almost feasibly can't be done. This is kind of where Tom jumping ahead. This is the context map, similar to the one I think that Trish has that we provided on January 10th. One of the things I'd like to take here is this: the context of the site. There's been a lot of input about what is the scale and character of this. And while we recognize that there's a residential neighborhood across the way, we think we've addressed that by pushing the building back. There still is the ability to push the building even further back, but we're at the point where we don't want to get into so much detail that you can't pull back from it. I think that was some of the concern. We've almost provided too much detail, and a lot of the feedback we've gotten is, hey, don't provide all that detail, because once we approve that, we can't go back and change it. So we're trying to be flexible. We're not trying to be vague. It's just to really be able to participate in the CUP process, the conditional use permit process, is to actually say, not to come back 2 months from now and say, hey, you know what, we agreed to that 2 months ago, so we can't change it. Otherwise, we have to go back and start over again. So I don't want to have a civics lesson here, but I think it's purposely vague in a certain sense. We've actually pulled some stuff out that Trish has highlighted, which is the architectural standards, the parking standards, and things like that. No one wants to lock in, because I've got some people saying you've got too much parking, and I've got some people saying you've got too little parking. Well, let's go figure out exactly what the parking should be based on what the plan might be. So the context on, you know, on the east side of North Greensboro Street is Fitch's Lumberyard, Southern States, Harris Teeter. There's large footprint, relatively tall buildings, Carmel Mall. And I think in order for further development and the activity and businesses to continue to thrive, we need to have this density. And while there are other locations where that is appropriate, we think it's perfectly appropriate putting it next to MI and what are really adjacent to B1C and other B1G zonings. So I'll leave it at that, because I know there's a lot of ground to cover tonight. And I've got my contact information here if people want to get a hold of me.
Okay. Rather than launching into asking Ken a bunch of questions, let me we have 17 people signed up, so I would like to hear from them, and then maybe we can take up whatever questions we have either for Ken or the staff after that. So the first person signed up is Sarah Bruce. And then Nancy Jane Sammons will be after that. Thank you. And by the way, before you begin, Sarah, excuse me for 1 second. Let me just say, I'm gonna use the timer tonight. When you hear it going off, that means you've been talking for 3 minutes, and you need to finish the sentence you're on, in a way that your English teacher in high school would approve of. And that is to say, not a run-on sentence. And the other point I want to make is, I guarantee you in this hearing that somebody at some point will say something that you really agree with. Somebody else will say something that you really disagree with. If you could please refrain from interrupting the flow of this meeting That'd be great. Thanks. Go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Again, my name is Sarah Bruce. I am a former Carrboro resident. I now reside just over the Chatham County line. Carrboro's always been a leader in the region when it comes to growth management, sustainability, and progressive values and causes. It's a wonderful place to live and to visit, and we all want it to stay that way. And local governments and developers, along with everyone else, are having to do more with less right now. And we'll have to continue doing that because, as we all recognize, the planetary resources are finite, and they're going to stay that way. So I feel that density and this project in particular is a way to do exactly that, to do more with less. In this project, Carver has a real opportunity to grow in a way that has a lot of benefits and, I think, relatively few impacts. While the additional residents might pose some additional traffic, it's less than if they lived further away and had to drive to the downtown. These folks have an opportunity to get to downtown destinations without using a vehicle, which is a real value. These people will also bring tax revenue to the town. They'll bring commercial activity to the downtown and more riders for our transit systems. So putting these folks downtown in multifamily dwellings means that they'll be on, that there's going to be fewer new water and sewer lines. There's going to be less impervious cover overall and fewer greenhouse gases going into our atmosphere. So that's something that we all benefit from. So I just want to say in conclusion, I think this would be a wonderful project, and I'd love to see the Board of Aldermen support the rezoning. I think it would be a jewel in the crown of the town. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Nancy Jane Sammons and then David Morgan. Nancy Jane here? No. David Morgan and then Joel Kreuter.
You can start clocking me now.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Can't do much about that. My name is David Morgan. In the interest of full disclosure, I am the broker that represents Belmont Sayre in the acquisition of this property. I am a former resident of Carver and actually put up some duplexes at the end of Goldston Lane for some years ago. The one point I want to make here tonight, the one point of contention over these hearings has been that there's been a fear from some people about this being a student housing project. I think the developer has done a lot in the design and in the whole design of the project to try to alleviate those fears. But for those who are still fearful of that, it's my understanding that students are not a protected class in real estate. And so if the Board of Aldermen in their esteemed judgment want to make sure that this is not a student housing project, they have the right to put that in as a condition and say there'll be no undergraduate students in this, and then that's the end of that. I presume that we're talking about undergraduates because we know once you get that degree, you're automatically become a...
an adult.
...wonderful part of society and everything else. So we'd like to have graduate students there because this is a live-work project, and we want to encourage that. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Joel, and then Catherine Devine.
Hello. Traffic is pretty horrible right now at Shelton and Greensboro, and this cannot possibly make it any better. A minor thing, perhaps. 800 cars a day was the traffic engineer's estimate. It's awfully low. And if this project adds 50 or 100, and hopefully a project with this much commercial space would have some flow through those commercial businesses. And if they're successful, there'll be a lot of traffic through there, which would not be there otherwise. The other end of Shelton Street, there's an elementary school. There's a lot of traffic on Shelton now. And there's a lot of flow, which is just using Shelton to get from east to west. That'll be increased drastically. no light, no third lane. I'm not for either one of those things. But to think that that intersection, which is already hazardous, will not get much worse. To cross that street now, broad daylight, off rush hour, you might make it. Rush hour, it's tough. At night, it's deadly. This project provides for possible bars, restaurants, nightclubs. People drinking, trying to turn left, right out of there. Seems like a bad idea. It's bad now. Don't want to see it get worse. That's probably my chief objection to this project. Scaling it back a little bit, it's good, it's something. But this is a big lump of a project. However committed to the concept of density it may be, it's going to be ugly, and it's going to be messy, and it's going to cause accidents. A lot of kids crossing that street. Anyone who lives around there, as I do, can tell you a story from last week of some kid almost getting hit. Like a mother, a father, a baby carriage, and a dog almost getting hit. Broad daylight. Happens all the time. And it will happen if traffic there is increased. It's a big, big problem. I am not entirely against this project in theory, but it's too large for that space, and I'm going to stick with that. Don't approve. I say no.
All right. Thanks, Joel. Catherine Devine and then Arne Gray. Catherine Wynn. Okay. Arne Gray and then Eliza DuBose.
My wife and I have been in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, since 1970, 40-some years. We were particularly interested in moving to Carrboro in, I think, 1986, and restored several of the houses right across the street from this project. And we still do own houses at 407, 501, 503, 505 North Greensboro Street. Traffic is likely to be somewhat of a problem, although on a scale of from 1 to 10, if I'm frustrated now, which I am, I'll probably be frustrated at 8, and so it's not that big a deal. I also don't mind students. In fact, I kind of like them. I like their spirit. I like their... So if there are students there, it's not a major concern. We've lived in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Durham over the 40 years we've been here. And each of those places I'm quite familiar with, and my family is, and they each have a separate identity. Ken Ryder has done some really, I think, wonderful things in Durham, restoring some of Durham's identity in the tobacco warehouses, etc. Chapel Hill is different than Carrboro. I think most of us would know that, and it has been forever. And in fact, every time somebody tries to blend Chapel Hill and Carrboro in the government, there's always a big uproar, you know, because it's different. I moved to Carrboro because it was different. I moved to Carrboro because it was a place for people with moderate income. I've lived in the historic district in Chapel Hill and also in what passes, I guess, for the historic district in Carrboro. The places in Chapel Hill are million-dollar, multi-million-dollar places, and that's fine, and I'm glad for them. The places in Carrboro are modest, relatively speaking. This enterprise, I think Ken has been very responsive. I'm sorry, Ken, I don't know you, so Mr. Ryder has been very responsive to various things, but I think he's trying to put something that maybe doesn't fit with Carrboro into Carrboro. And he's done a wonderful job of trying to make it fit, I think, and it may even have some benefits, but I'm not sure it really fits with Carrboro. And the reasons I'm interested in Carrboro and the reasons that I moved there, and in fact, my wife and I will be moving, this has been in the works for a long time, right across the street at 501 North Greensboro. I can appreciate what that's me. Okay, so I'm out of here. But the basic idea isn't so much students or traffic, but it's trying to place this in Carrboro and with the scale.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks.
Thank you.
My English teacher. Ms. DuBose and then Tyler Huntington.
Happy New Year. I'll try to make this as brief as possible. I apologize for whether my thoughts are as well organized as they could be. Kind of a surprise coming to this tonight. I'm going to concur with most of what Joel said and not spend a lot of time repeating that. I'll just summarize. I don't think this street can take any more traffic than it already even has. I appreciate the time and the care that went into this design. I'm going to apologize for what may sound like come lately criticisms. I actually can't believe this is even being considered there, and I don't mean that to sound as negative, because I think we need ideas like this. We need these possibilities. I agree with the concepts of high density. I agree with how much effort is being put into making this include affordable housing and make it green design. I'm going to stick back with this. I really don't think the traffic is going to work. All those photographs didn't even have cars in them. I don't even know how they took those photographs. I don't understand, and I'm sure somebody can tell me later on why there can't be a connector behind it. I'm concerned about any high-density project that doesn't have another means of egress and access. I mean, I don't care who did a study about what. That doesn't remove this problem in my mind. And I'm also going to say, again, great work on the design and paying attention to the ways we need to move forward in Carrboro. I live here. I actually expect more when it comes to green design. I want to see a green roof. I want to see trees. And I understand don't put too much detail in there because then you're married to it later on. But really, it's all parking lot. There's not a solar array above the parking lot. And what does affordable housing mean? Is that a one-bedroom apartment that a family, like a family of a teacher, is supposed to occupy? I know. I have to go do more of my homework also. But I keep hearing these bywords, and I don't know what they mean anymore. I don't care if it's a student or not. But affordable housing for whom and at what cost? I love that we have programs that channel families into affordable housing, like the trust and everything like that. But I still think for all the problems this is going to cause in an already dangerous street where we can't have more traffic lights, there's already a lot of busyness. I'm wondering how many empty residential units or ones up for sale there already are, how much unused office space, commercial space there already is. Even given that I may get productive answers to those questions as I do more of my own research, I still think this is not the place for this otherwise very interesting and capable design. It's just not the right spot. Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
All right. Tyler and then Damon.
Tyler's gone.
Damon and then John Gallagher.
Darn Obama.
Is he cutting into our ratings?
He is. We have to compete with him. We have to compete with BAM tonight.
I forgot about that. Hi, I'm Damon Siles. I'm the chair of the planning board.
You're done, BAM.
Sorry, Damon.
Thanks.
I'm Damon. I'm chair of the planning board, so I'll be happy to answer any questions you have about the comments you got from us several months ago now. But I'm actually here to talk about my own comments, and they'll be brief. And I'm going to read them. Approval of this rezoning request will facilitate the placement of new commercial space, including that rare species, new office space, in an area that has been zoned commercial use for more than 25 years. It will create new living space for around 150 people within easy walking distance and biking distance of downtown, with an easy bus ride away from pretty much everything else. It seems to me like the parties who are requesting this rezoning have addressed many of the important concerns expressed by you and the public during the previous meetings. By reducing the size of the project, they can now show that there's no need to widen the road, to add turn lanes. They've increased the non-residential proportion of the project, as you requested that they do. The town's planning staff has reiterated one important remaining concern, which I share, about the potential incompatibility of the frontmost portion of the project with the existing character of this stretch of North Greensboro. I think the developers can find ways to address this concern, particularly when it comes to the design of the now smaller commercial building, the setback of that building from the right-of-way, and the screening of the parking lot from the street. I hope they'll also consider actually reducing the parking even more and unbundling it from the residential units, as we've discussed before. Finally, the last time I spoke to you about this issue, I expressed my own worries about the procedural complexities that have been associated with conditional zoning districts and the way that process has played out in this case. I encouraged you then to take care with the conditions you place on this rezoning, should you approve it. Depending on how they're worded, the conditions could prevent the advisory boards, the developer, and you, from revisiting important features of the project and finding solutions during the CUP process. The revised list of conditions presented by staff, especially numbers 3 and 12, seem to me to offer this kind of flexibility where it didn't exist before. So, thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
All right. John Gallagher and then Celia Pierce.
I'm a longtime Carrboro resident. I've lived here for 15 years, and I previously volunteered on our environmental advisory board. I think Carrboro is just a magnificent place, and I think part of it, its ongoing vibrancy and sustainability, is really linked to infill development like this. There are concerns about traffic that I think transcend this particular project in our downtown. But, you know, among other things, just really the consistency of this project with Carrboro's 2020 plans, which, among other things, we'd like to double our commercial space, which I think is really lacking. I have a small business. I do environmental engineering. I work out of my basement. I would like to have an office in a development like this just down the street from where I live. The mixed-use aspects, I think, really lend itself to, again, continued vibrancy of our community. The lead design aspects, green environmental friendly design. I think some of the details about, you know, the parking, the ability to put in real sustainable features, energy efficiency and things like that, all of those types of things can be addressed as we get into the more detailed design of the project. Being on North Greensboro, access to public transportation, which my kids utilize. I live just further up North Greensboro. So, again, I think I'm just a real proponent of this. You think about the really interesting places in the world, New York, the European cities and things like that. It really relies on high-density mixed-use development, and this is consistent with that. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Celia Pierce and then Jack Haggerty.
Right out front, I'm here to strongly urge the board to vote no on the request to rezone. The rezoning, and some of this has already been touched on at great length, it does allow high density in an area that I think is very inappropriate. The high density development would be discordant with a surrounding historic, well-established neighborhood. I live one block to the west of where it would be going in. And I've really been impressed with the way everybody has worked together to try to come up with a concept that would work. I'm sorry it hasn't been done. I have walked the neighborhood, and here are some of the issues I anticipate. There would be nighttime noise brought into a neighborhood that currently is a very quiet, pleasant residential area. Increased light pollution. I realize parking now isn't being talked about because it isn't being laid out in detail, but the fact is there's parking issues throughout the whole area, and adding this many more cars into the mix, because people will have cars. They may walk downtown, but they will have cars because there's just too much you cannot get to in this area if you do not have a car. People have already brought up additional traffic problems to the area that's already congested, brought about by the single entrance and exit directly across from Shelton Street. Less than a block away is an exit from Poplar and an entrance exit for Southern States. And then as you move towards downtown, it gets increasingly complex. It will increase traffic in the surrounding neighborhood, including Oak Avenue, Shelton, and Connecting Road. We saw it during the Weaver Street construction, and woo-hoo, that's over. But without a doubt, people will look for ways around slow and congested traffic. And they now know they've tried it on, and they're going to be coming through the neighborhood, making it unsafe for people to walk and be out enjoying the kind of activities that we can enjoy in this town. One of the biggest reasons, or I should say most emphasized reason in many meetings, has been that it adds to the tax base and helps provide relief for residential homeowners and their taxes. In fact, a study by the Carver Economic and Community Development came to a bottom line that cost to the city for this kind of a development would exceed revenue, resulting in an annual loss of $13,500. So instead of receiving a benefit, residential taxpayers would be undermining the development annually. Voting against rezoning is not voting against development. The area is currently zoned for a CT, and one of the lots already has the B1G CZ. I have done this too much. Rolls off my tongue. But they would not be able to implement a high density on that current lot without further site plan changes and coordination with the city. Vision 2020, another often referred to tool, that is a policymaking document to use in planning for the future. It's an even-handed document, and we have to be careful that we don't cherry-pick the parts of it that might support one school of thought or another. It's a caretaking tool designed to preserve the town's history and qualities and an atmosphere of desirable growth, and the combined goals, and it's a policy-making document to use in planning for the future. Please vote no on rezoning these parcels to protect the character and integrity of Carborough's established residential neighborhoods.
Thank you.
Thank you, Celia. All right. Jack Haggerty and then Susan Burnett.
Good evening, Mayor and Board. The supporters have spoken in favor of this project because of the affordability of the units, the contribution of the tax base, and the general sustainability of the project. I don't think anybody speaking against this project is against affordability or against sustainability. Statements about Shelton Station's contribution to the tax base have been, it seems, exaggerated. You have heard about the large amount of traffic this project will generate. You've heard about the complete lack of harmony this project has with the surrounding neighborhood. I'm unable to comprehend how the board can make a straight-faced finding that this project is is harmonious with the surroundings or is consistent with any town concept plan or visioning document. To say that these lots are downtown lots is absurd. You are considering making a special district to accommodate a developer where no such thing was ever anticipated. The process we are involved in is dismaying. As was pointed out in earlier and as noted in your abstract, if the board makes the decision to rezone the lots, these buildings will in essence be approved. There will still be a conditional use permit hearing, but it will have been rendered almost empty of content by the proposed rezoning. You will have voted to rezone the property on the developer's terms, thereby approving the size and height of these buildings, leaving only minor site elements to be discussed in the forum that is intended to be the citizen's place to give comment on the entire building. Damon Siles expressed exactly that concern in September, pointing out that the text and zoning amendments were being rushed through in an irregular process that will allow the planning, that will disallow the planning board the opportunity to re-examine in the conditional use permit process. Why this ready accommodation? The board asked for 25% commercial square footage. The developer replied 20, and the board obliged. The developer proposed LEED Silver rating, and if I understand correctly, that has been reduced to following the LEED equivalency process. The much-touted sustainability may be a phantom benefit or phantom effort. There's no independent review of compliance during construction, and there's no verification by commissioning as the building is being occupied and used. The flexibility that has been shown by the developer seems late in the project. The attitude seems to be that we should be accepting of an ill-considered and poorly located project and that the hardship should be borne by the neighborhood, not the developer. If you vote to approve the rezoning, you are overlooking quite a number of critical points made by the town staff, who are experts on the policies and the goals of the town. You would be doing it at best with only a partial support of the advisory boards. You may well be doing it by the slimmest of majorities. You have heard many citizens who oppose this project in its current state. These citizens came to this meeting and previous ones because of their concerns. These are spontaneous and sincere expressions of concerns. I ask you to vote against the rezoning and urge the developer to resubmit a project that evinces a more holistic and encompassing consideration of Carrboro. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Susan Barnett and then David Arneson. Oh, okay. Good to see you. David Arneson and then Dersey Suzuki.
Good evening. I've spoken before in support of this project, and I'm just here to kind of restate my support for the project. I think the benefits are pretty clear in the short term, the jobs, construction, probably one of the largest building permits that Carrboro's seen in quite a while. And then in the long term, increase to the tax base, probably about 150 residents or so living within about a 3 to 5 minute walk of all of our businesses here in downtown Carrboro. 24,000 square feet now of commercial space, roughly half we can assume will probably be retail and then second floor office space. This in a town that struggles to attract particularly large office tenants. We're not anywhere near a major highway, so it's going to be a challenge to get large businesses to try and locate in Carrboro. So I think this strikes a good balance of providing mixed-use development in our downtown core. Mixed-use, higher-density projects, and I'm not even sure I would call this high-density. It's higher density than we're used to. Is going to be far better, far more green, more sustainable than other options that we have with more suburban types of development and lower density developments. We've heard a lot of opinions about traffic on North Greensboro Street. I drive on North Greensboro a lot. I walk up and down it. I go to the taco truck in front of Fitch Lumber and have to cross the street there. I'd like to hear more facts and numbers and evidence from a traffic study about how much traffic there really is on North Greensboro, how it compares to other streets. How does it compare to Main Street, Weaver Street, Franklin Street in Chapel Hill? There's two lanes of traffic. And there's quite a bit of development and new construction going on Franklin Street. How many car trips really are there on North Greensboro, and how close to what anyone at NCDOT would consider capacity is North Greensboro? It's my opinion that North Greensboro can handle more traffic and that there won't be a significant traffic problem by having new development along it in this location. I think this project is one thoughtful, appropriate step forward for growth and development in Carborough. Thank you.
Thanks.
Suzuki and then Barbara Cudmore.
Hello. I'm going to be brief because everybody already said what I intend to say. But about 6 years ago, when my husband and I decided to move to this area, we could have gone to Chapel Hill. That's actually, we didn't know about the existence of Carborough. Yeah, that was a big surprise. What is this, you know? And actually, we started telling our friends that we actually moved to Chapel Hill just to make things more simple, you know, to explain Carborough. Yeah, I don't think it's in the map, in the big map. So anyways, we fell in love with Carborough the way Carborough is, and not with the potential of Carborough when they become an urban environment. We ran away from New York, and somebody mentioned New York. New York is not green. That concentration of people, and you know everybody in New York uses public transportation, which is great. Nobody has a car because there is no parking spaces. But is that green? I mean, most people have respiratory problems there. So, but what bothers me the most in this situation here is that nobody knows what's happening. Residents of Carborough, people that I spoke with, nobody knows about this project. The people that I spoke with, I hope they sent you an email because they couldn't come because of the children. They, you know, they are concerned with their own lives, and I think they are trusting that you guys do a good job protecting Carborough. So I'm sure I speak for a lot of people. They don't want more traffic. They don't want more noise. They don't want great densities. And the building, I'm sorry, it's ugly. So that's what I have to say. Thank you. Please consider this.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Barbara Cudmore and then David Burgess. Okay. Well, it's good to see you as well. David Burgess.
I don't know which place I can put this up where people can see it. I'm not blocking anybody's view, but well, this is the new developer's rendering of the building. I was very impressed of the pastoral setting and the pictures on Greensboro Street. Just it looked very peaceful, all the mill houses and the trees. And, you know, it's sad to see a change. This is obviously a money versus quality of life issue. I don't know if anybody's really stated that outright, but that's obviously what it is. I mean, you have maybe 100, 150 business owners in downtown Carborough. They stand to make a lot of money if the project is approved, and undoubtedly many of them are very vocal in their support. I'm sure some of the people that spoke here tonight were business owners, and I feel for their plight. It's nice for a business owner to make money, but as well, you have about 18,000 other residents who chose to live in Carborough because they love the character of the town. If they wanted an urban environment, they would have moved to Durham or Chapel Hill or Raleigh. But they chose the small-town atmosphere of Carborough. I've talked with a lot of the residents about the project, and it's shocking how nobody knows about the project here. You have 18,000 people that they haven't been informed. There have been articles in the paper. But nobody really knows where 500 North Greensboro is when they read about it. As far as they know, it might be right down next to 54 on Greensboro or something like that. Nobody really has a concept of what this entails, you know, what you guys are doing here. And so now you're proposing this project, this huge building. As far as I know, it might be the biggest building in all of Carborough. It's massive, and it's
right in the middle of town. It's larger than any building around it. And it's not just the one building. There's a second building on the property as well. It's much larger than anything close by. It's going to dramatically change the character of the whole neighborhood. And it seems to be opening up Pandora's box in downtown. The project in itself will dramatically transform the character of Carrboro and pave the way for more similar projects. While many of the 18,000 residents are just scratching their heads, asking themselves, what's going on in my town? This isn't the place I chose to live. I wanted to live in a small town. It's just being changed almost dramatically by this one project, it seems like. I mean, this is huge. So I hope you'll look at the big picture and see how extreme and unwelcome the changes are that this brings to the community as a whole. We don't want the crowds, we don't want the traffic, and we don't want the urban environment. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Is there anybody else who did not sign up who's moved to speak at this point? All right, let me hear from Jackie first, and then.
I hate public speaking, and I've never done it before, but I have lived here for almost 20 years at Cedar Court, so almost adjacent to this, and now on here on Elm Street. I'm also a real estate agent, and so not normally opposed to this kind of thing, but I have to say that the aesthetic of this is dramatically going to change the whole feel of that area. And as somebody who drives people around here often when they're making a decision as to whether they're going to move here or not, in conjunction with a massive CVS building that you're also looking at a rezoning thing on, you are looking at changing the essence of what attracts people to this town. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, on the issue of affordable housing, if this is two-bedroom units that you're putting in there, there will not be families with children moving in there. We have tons and tons of two-bedroom units within walking distance to downtown Carrboro now. Fidelity Street, Cedar Court, White Oak, Sylvia Square. I mean, it goes on. There are 39 of them on the market right now, as I like to call them, have failed to sell. Why? What you're going to do here is put brand new units in. They will sell to students if they're two bedrooms. I wish I had a dollar for every client I have that I have to take to Durham and elsewhere because they cannot find affordable housing here to raise their families. I want families to move in here who invest in this community in the way that I invest in this community, come and serve on boards, and continue to engender what we have going here. You know, more student housing, which I'm sorry, that's what this is going to be if it's two bedrooms. That's just the reality of the situation. If you want to ban the students, their parents will buy it. I work with these people all the time. I mean, no. You know, and the aesthetic and the reality of the situation, this is just, no. I'm all about that. I'm European. I get the density thing, you know, but there's some aesthetic value that goes with that. You don't just get to plop a box down there and, oh, I'm Newt Gingrich tonight. Thank you very much for my time.
Not sure I believe that part, yeah. But the gentleman in the front row here.
Good evening. I'm Jonathan Charney. I'm a resident for the past 6 years here in Carrboro. And I have to say this is my first meeting live, and I'm really impressed. I'm impressed with the level of detail and the questioning and the care with which you all are taking all of these decisions. I think it started off with the decision about celebrating love, which is a great way to start. But just as an aspiring developer, one of the things that I kind of noticed about this is that this project really is about bringing people to Carrboro and bringing the mixed-use piece so that people can actually have offices there. I'm actually an independent consultant looking for an office and have struggled to find that. And I think, in particular, just in real headlines here, I think vision requires bold leadership. And we've heard a lot about what Carrboro has been. And I think what we're really talking about is what we want to make Carrboro. We want to make it carefully, but we do want to make changes to make it a richer and a comfortable place for all. And then the other piece is I think it's important to note that this developer has bent over backwards, it seems, to coming back and really looking at things and trying to engage the community. And I think that's a really important piece. And I just worry about the message that it sends as far as this process. If we move so far along and then you know, don't value that effort and the work that goes into engaging the community on this. So I'm strongly in favor of this project. Thank you.
All right. And Michelle Rivas, you get to have the last word.
Hear that, Joan? Michelle gets the last word.
Yeah, and don't you forget it, John.
Hi, I'm Michelle Rivas. I live with my husband, John, at 100 Oak Avenue. We've lived here for over 25 years. I don't want to repeat, so I will try not to, but I think my message is to vote no. I think the costs are too high. The density is too dense. And I'll just rattle off a few of those that particularly strike me. The traffic, for sure. We've been before you many times over the last decade to say the traffic in the neighborhoods is already problematic. We've petitioned and gotten some improvements. The long way to go, we know traffic will spill into the neighborhoods from this project. It's going to increase traffic. It's going to increase the public safety concerns we already have for the school children, for the neighbors with dogs and the elderly and the blind people that live in our neighborhood. So that's our biggest concern. Along with that, you know, Carborough needs an overall traffic plan. We don't have one. We have all these developments going up and being discussed, and yet we aren't looking at this holistically or comprehensively. So you need to start there and deal with that issue, because we don't have ways to grow more streets in Carborough, so we only have ways to fill them if we continue. I'm very concerned about economic development for our town. You've heard it said by one of our neighbors already. Your own staff says it's a loss, not a gain. So what sense do you make of that? I don't see it as a benefit. For all the ways we're talking about this being beneficial to our town, if we lose money and it costs us more to do this, then why is that the right direction? We've heard about jobs. 70 jobs is what your own papers say. If fully developed and fully occupied, we don't see that anywhere now. We haven't since I've lived here, so I don't know when this dream can come true, but I think it's a vision that's not attainable. So I would urge us to scale it back, continue to work really hard to preserve the character, quality of life here in Carborough. There's a lot at stake for all of us who live here now, work here now, and for those who might live and work here in the future. So let's find a middle way. I think Carborough can do this. I think we can continue to work on this. We can have great developers. We can bring these people together and find a way to make this kind of development work and achieve all the goals we have, I think, collectively share for 2020 in Carborough. Thanks.
Thanks, Michelle.
Okay. Dan?
Yeah, I don't know if others have questions. I don't, but I thought I'd just start off and put some thoughts out, because, well, I guess I kind of put out some of this in November when we considered this before, but I basically have four things I want to say about this project. One is that I do really appreciate the work that Ken has done to try and improve it and make it a better fit for the neighborhood and address the concerns that have been raised. It's really clear he's worked hard on that. You can't pull that on me.
If only.
Yeah, if only. And so thank you, Ken, for your work on that. Second thing I want to say, that I just want to be upfront about this, is that two of my friends are principals in this project, and I think one of the hardest things to do when you're in office is to vote against the interests of your friends, because you hope they'll still be your friends the next day, but you got to do what's right for the community. And so I'm going to vote against their interests tonight. And here's the main reason why. I mean, I agree with a lot of the things, concerns that have been raised, but I spent some time yesterday reviewing a town document called the Downtown Vision for Carborough, which is about a 10-year-old document. And this document was created, not everyone's familiar with it, with a big public process. Scores of people attended workshops. We brought in a walkable communities expert, and people talked about every aspect of downtown, and there was a lot of work to bring people to consensus or to some level of decision about how we want our downtown to grow and what we want it to look like into the future. And if you look through this document, there's a number of sections, and each one has, you know, really beautiful pictures, the kind you get in planning documents, and some, you know, good description of what's going on, and each one of them has a map. And in every section, the map stops on the north side at Parker Street. And all these scores of people came together and defined a downtown for Carrboro that stops at Parker Street. Now, someone might say, well, this is just next to Parker Street practically. But that's not the point. All the work we did to come together as a community and define our downtown was for a certain section. And in my mind, that doesn't mean that we know necessarily what should happen on these properties or not, but that they have not been included in the planning for downtown. And that's, you know, that's the primary reason why I don't support this. It's a huge change. I think even, I can't remember, since it's back in June when we had those numbers, Trish, maybe you can freshen my memory, but from the current zoning to even just to the old B1G, like took it from like, I don't know, somewhere between 10 and 20 units up to about 40 was what would have been allowed had we just gone to B1G. And then we have this like new zone that's going to like max it out, which I just think without an upfront public process that engages the community, it's too radical a change. And John Charney, who's my neighbor, made a good point that we need to be thinking about, how do you put it, the message that we're sending in what we do here today. And I do have, you know, I don't know if I'll be in the majority or in the minority on this vote, but I do have a message for developers, which is if you're proposing a radical change in zoning in Carrboro, and if you want my support, and I'm going to speak for Jackie's, if you want Jackie's support, you need to get together with the neighbors before you've drawn a building. And you need to talk to people and find out what their vision is for that property, get them in a charrette with pencils and paper and start drawing stuff and work from there, so you're going to be creating something that has buy-in for the community, or at least you understand going in what the obstacles are you're going to face. So anyway, that, you know, my hope is that as we move forward, we'll have, and that's what I consider, you know, the kind of process that we've done effectively over the last decades in this town, and that's helped make this a special place, is not just, you know, someone alluded to what Carrboro has been, but our forward-thinking processes have reflected a sense of community and of people coming together to put everyone's best thinking forward. And that hasn't happened with this project. We have Ken's best thinking. Ken's a smart guy, but there's a lot more that's missing that should have been there from the beginning.
Jack.
Now I'll speak for my friend Dan. I'm so once again impressed and proud of our community for coming together to discuss this. There are very different opinions, very different views, very different goals represented in this room, and yet it's a civil place. It's a place where everybody agrees that they want what's best for the community. They're just disagreeing on what's best for the community. So I thank you for that. These kind of meetings aren't always this Carrboro, and that's why we're so proud of the town. Our downtown is very small. As Dan said in the downtown visioning, it ended at Parker Street. People move to Carrboro, not always in our downtown neighborhoods, but in the neighborhoods to the north. They move to downtown Carrboro because of the specialness of downtown. Even people who aren't right around where we are now, they didn't move to Carrboro for no reason. They moved because Carrboro has a sense of community and has a very special feel. That is a result of how our downtown looks and feels. So it's not just the value or the quality of life of the people that live downtown that we're protecting. It's the value of the quality of life and the value of the homes for the people who live even further out, all of Carrboro. This community has spent, I think, the past 40 years becoming what it is today. And it's become a place where people want to live because of the sense of community and because of how it looks. And it has that kind of quirky old feel. And because you're not overwhelmed by infrastructure, but rather you're overwhelmed by wonderful people, that makes us a very attractive place to live. It also makes us a very attractive place to come and build so that people will want to live there. We have created the value. The people in Carrboro who have created Carrboro, we have created the value. So it's up to the people who live in Carrboro, who have built Carrboro, who have made it the special place it is today, to be able to determine how that capital is spent. Okay? Somebody is going to make money off of what we've created. We need to determine what that looks like and how that affects all of us. Understand? So I am very concerned that the goose that laid the golden egg is in danger. We're very tiny. One mistake and we can start downhill quickly. I think we need to respect who we are. We need to respect the specialness of us. I would love to see something that looked like a circle of row houses, maybe. Something kind of simple and quaint that maybe could also, you know, have a lot of people living in it. But this does not look like Carrboro. Some of the same people who are supporting this supported Greenbridge. Enough said. Okay? Enough said. Our own staff is saying to us, this isn't a good idea. It's not in keeping with the character of Carrboro. It could cost us money rather than making money. It will have traffic problems. Staff isn't in favor of it. Most of the public who lives around there is not in favor of it. The people sitting here today are not the only people we've heard from. We've gotten lots of emails and lots of phone calls. Because we as a community have built this capital and have built something that people want to then come in and profit from, which is their right, we have a say in what that looks like and how that's going to affect it and how that's going to affect the ability of the rest of us to continue enjoying living here. I'm not against all development. I'm not against a development there. I'm against something there that no way on God's green earth looks anything at all like what's surrounding it. And I don't want what's surrounding it to then morph into looking like what this looks like. No, this does not fit in Carrboro. It is not good for Carrboro. It is bad for us aesthetically. It is bad for us, I think, economically. And I think it's bad for traffic. I think we can do better, and we deserve better. Thank you.
Lydia, and then Sammy, and then Michelle.
Well, I'd like to echo Jackie's points that I appreciate all the conversation tonight, all of the civility, all of the really, really heartfelt and strong, I believe, arguments made on both sides of this issue. I mean, this is one I think that several of us have struggled with certain aspects of it, and it's a big decision, I think, for our town. Now, I have several points I want to make, but one is, you know, looking back at the Vision 2020 document, and at that time, if you look at the objectives, as several speakers have said, there was a decided emphasis placed on this board of aldermen to grow downtown. Okay, and in that light, we have over the last several years approved various projects for downtown, none of which have come to fruition yet. Some of which are going to be on the way. But in my view, this development is entirely in keeping with the 2020 document in every way. And in my view, the one big concern is traffic. And that's not the fault necessarily of this development. I mean, that's a problem that we will have as we continue to grow downtown. And those of us who were elected to serve on the Board of Aldermen also have a responsibility to, we hear from our citizens, you know, don't raise our taxes, keep our taxes low, look at ways to maintain our tax rate and so on. And, you know, in North Carolina, there are two ways to do that, property taxes and sales taxes. And so, you know, a long time ago, or, you know, several years ago, this town decided we're going to try to do that by growing our commercial tax base downtown and encouraging people to live downtown through mixed use. And so, you know, this is part of that effort to try to maintain our tax rate, to try to have folks living downtown, spending money downtown. And, you know, and frankly, you know, the aesthetics of this project with particularity remain to be seen, as do some of the components of it, such as parking. But every other component of it that we've worked on with the developer for almost the last year, as he said, this is the fourth or fifth time that there's been a public meeting about this, you know, down to the LEED certified environmentability, down to the affordable housing, down to workforce housing. We heard from lots of folks that would appreciate being able to have the folks that work with them or folks that are in that lower to middle class tax bracket to be able to have a place to live near downtown. You know, they're apartments, right? So, again, that's also commercial tax base being apartments. And, you know, it kind of goes on and on. It's right on our transit corridor. It's in a location. I mean, I'm hearing that this is not considered downtown. But Vision 2020 says, you know, the Century Center is the focal point of downtown. This is 1,000 feet from the Century Center, less than a fifth of a mile. And I'm not saying it should go much further north than that. But just north of this is a big building that's in an M1 zoning location. So in my view, it would go up to this area. And in fact, these apartments would be back by the railroad corridor, not unsightly, on frontage of Greensboro Street. So I frankly think it's a really good use of this spot, this place of infill. So I'll let others speak, but I'd just like to say I'm very much in support of this development. I appreciate everything that Ken and his folks have done to work with our concerns, work with the concerns of the neighbors, reduce this from 114 to 104 to 96 apartments, increase the commercial deck space from 10 to 20%, made that front building from 3 stories to 2 stories, and having 20% of affordable housing. I mean, it's pretty much everything that I would be looking for in a development like this.
Sammy, Michelle, and then Randy.
So, you know, a lot of good points have been brought up today and in the past meetings, and I'm again just echoing a lot of on from everyone who's spoken so far. There's a general consensus that the developer has been pretty responsive to a lot of the concerns brought up by us and by the public, us responding to the public. And I think that they're not perfect, and though points Dan's points of what the plans show, Parker Street being that boundary, I think this being just on the other side of that boundary, and the fact that the plan was written not well, maybe it's time to revisit and create another plan, doesn't make it out of the question that this be a developed higher density mixed use. It is in the downtown. I think it is in line with a lot of the philosophies that I ran on when I got elected for mixed use, higher density in downtown, supporting pedestrian and bikeability, mixed use. Having said that, though, I do have a concern on how limited it is with commercial activity, and find that problematic. And understand it's partly due to the fact, and I've expressed this at our previous meetings, the depth of the property and the challenge of, as the developers pointed out, of receiving financing for something that doesn't have street frontage. And in that line of thinking, I would like, before being able to fully support this, to hear from the developer on any ways in which he could mitigate that concern and basically make a building and a design that, if the conditions were to change in the future, or if we were able to have a bike pedestrian path along the railroad track, for example, that back building could be retrofittable on the ground floor, either the parking lot, because we don't need that much space for parking, because people will be biking and walking and using public transportation, but also on the upper level for commercial. And I would want to flag that as something that wouldn't be locked in because the designs are showing it different. I would want to make sure that that's something that we really could come back and revisit. The other thing I would like to explore is how much further back the building could be pushed without compromising the access to the neighboring lot. In other words, maximizing the front street sidewalk and streetscape. That would be something else I'd want us to look into. And then I understand that the developer spoke with someone from the DOT and spoke about raised sidewalks on Greensboro Street. And I'd be really curious to see that. That's been a big challenge on the Transportation Advisory Board. We've been looking at Greensboro Street for a long time. Traffic has been an issue for the community for a long time. And if we could really have raised sidewalks, that would mitigate a lot of the concerns. Most people don't stop in the sidewalk until someone's actually in it, and so it's really dangerous. But if they know they're going to ruin their car if they don't slow down anyway, they may at least then slow down.
You're saying raised crosswalk, in other words?
A raised, crosswalk. So it could be level with the surrounding sidewalks. And I'm glad that we don't have to expand the road. I was concerned about that and looked into it, thinking that we could DOT could come back and retroactively, unilaterally decide to expand the road. It looks like that's probably not likely, given the fact of how there's so much competition for a limited amount of funds statewide. I think those are my main points that I wanted to share so far. So in summary, I wanted to mention I've run into some senior citizens who have mentioned wanting to be able to live very close to downtown and have walkability there, understanding that it is hard to find somewhat affordable that close to downtown. And so I wanted to reflect those citizens who have heard from. And so just to summarize, given some of these conditions, if they could be addressed, such as the retrofittability for commercial of the back building, both the parking portion of it and the first floor, I would be willing to support this project.
Do you all mind if we get the developer to address that, and
sure,
then I'll come back to you? Okay.
I'll just direct Sammy's comments. It might be helpful just for a little bit from a visual. So, just to orient people, what Sammy's talking about is this portion of the building is built at grade, and then the entire site slopes down such that you can essentially tuck this parking underneath the residential units that we've built above. And one of the discussions has been, as we've been trying to increase the amount of commercial space, was this is an entirely non-residential building with retail and office. We're not opposed to programming more commercial space, but in order to draw potential users for whatever services or retail uses would be in here, it's very difficult. I think folks can appreciate that the front of this building is right in line with Mac Fitch's lumber yard, so it's very deep into the site. So it's challenging today to see programming the space, and most likely it'll remain vacant, and it'll be kind of dead space in the overall program. So what we were proposing to do is this portion of the first floor, we would basically build it and construct it to code such that if the need came to turn it to live-work units or more retail or office space, that that could be done sometime in the future. I don't know if that's 2 years from now, 5 years from now, or 30 years from now. It's not dissimilar from the rehabilitation work that we do on old mill buildings. You know, when they were built, no one thought about what they might be in the future. So I think in the spirit of kind of trying to, we don't know what's going to happen in 30 years. This parcel may get developed, this one may not. So to the extent, kind of tying in other issues, if the goal is to maybe interconnect these so people don't have to keep on coming out on Greensboro, this can then possibly be pretty prominent and important commercial space to deliver for tax base. So there's ways to do that by having, if you see that this building is a little bit fatter than this one, it's mainly because these are kind of ideal for retail users so that they can be successful. There's kind of a dimensional quality to a successful retail space. So it may wind up that we make this part of the building a little bit fatter here, but then narrow it again, so that at least this piece could ultimately would be some type of frontage for commercial space. Similarly, the park that is now underground parking, if this wound up being, who knows, bike path, rail corridor, transit stop, road, who knows what happens. I think what Sammy is saying is, let's just think about, build this and plan for that potentially that could be turned to commercial space, because that might be more commercial frontage that would make for viable commercial use. So I think those are all achievable things. We're comfortable doing that, and I think it's really details we could get into in the CUP process.
Tell us about your conversation with DOT and the possibility of raised crosswalk.
So in general, I was amazed at kind of the thoughtfulness of the DOT on some of the things that we were talking about. A lot of folks have mentioned kind of the safety and traffic and concerns, and they were very open, and I don't think they're going to, they didn't commit to anything, so I think at some point, you know, we need to get them back in the room again to talk about these things. But they're, given that we don't have to put the turn lanes in, I think there's a lot of interest in trying to figure out how this intersection, through different kind of visual pavement treatments, potentially speed limit changes, and visual cues further up towards Greenboro, that you could actually slow down some of the traffic. And some of those were actually having a refuge in like a median, not a raised median, but somewhere for people to stop. We even talked about putting some kind of lighting in the pavement that could shine up. I mean, at nighttime, it's incredibly dark at that intersection. Mm-hmm. So I think they're open to do a lot of different things. I think raised crosswalks would be really pushing, but I'm happy to push them to that and have a good reason. You know, if there's nothing else, there's a uniqueness to Carbro where I feel like we can kind of use that leverage to get something that they would not normally do. I think they're very interested in seeing. Because I think because of, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, people do traffic studies, and Andrew's here from MAB, and you kind of take credit for bicycle trips and, you know, bus trips, and kind of people do that in all kinds of towns. But, I mean, legitimately, they pull people off of the roads. So given that this is a real living, breathing example of people really doing multimodal, I think here and other places along the corridor and other roads, that you can legitimately make the argument that this deserves some type of special treatment. You know, will we get everything? No. But I think I've shown a willingness to kind of keep going at that one thing. We can't stop on other things, but I think we could be successful in getting that. I'm not sure we'll get raised crosswalks, but I think we'll get enough that make that as good as we possibly can.
Right. So when you spoke with Chuck Edwards, he didn't confirm the raised sidewalks part of it.
I don't recall exactly about the raised sidewalks. We talked about a number of different pavement treatments, okay, and things like that. I don't recall.
Yeah. Okay. You can have a seat there. Thank you, Ken. Michelle asked for you to go first, Randy. So Randy and then Michelle.
Oh, okay. I want to thank everyone who's here tonight and the process that working through. I want to thank the neighbors who've been at various meetings. I want to thank Dan and Jackie for sharing their view. I deeply value all of your views and your opinions. I hear what you're saying, but I see the project differently. Tonight, we unanimously approved February as For the Love of Carrboro Month. I find it ironic that we're looking at a potentially commercial project, and we're looking at the love of Carrboro for the love of Carrboro from two different pairs of eyes. We're looking at it from the point of view of the neighbors immediate to the downtown, and from the eyes of the business community. You know, it's a great challenge for us in Carrboro. This is a defining moment. If I could wave a magic wand, I would create a buffer between the mill houses and the commercial sites in Carrboro, the commercial areas. I can't do that. We don't have land to do that. That wasn't in the mindset. People live right across the street from commercial property. If not this project, what? What project? What project would you see? This is land that will not remain vacant. You know, Carrboro is a town that's in transition. Each of us is very much aware of that. And we're aware of her need to change. It's really difficult to change, and none of us want to see that happen. And yet, we know that for Carrboro to be locally resilient, Carrboro needs to change and is changing. I read through several documents. I'm really glad Dan brought up the downtown Carrboro new vision. That was 2001, which is already 11 years old. And I was one of the folks, I know a lot of people in this room were one of the folks that worked with Dan Burden on that. And I just want to point out some of the things that were in the recommendations made then that speak to the values that this project has now. One was better use of available land. Two, compact land use patterns, because we have so few vacant parcels in Carrboro. Three, mixed use that contains retail and residential. Four, encouraging affordable housing and infill. Five, allowing more people to live downtown, increasing shopping, and occupying downtown 24/7. Historically, Carrboro grew up around a mill, around manufacturing. The historic homes that I know Carly and her extended family lived in, and I know that they were here right from the very beginning. They have their homes because the mill was here. Okay, that was live work then. So we have a history of live work. And just because we had a history of live work generations ago does not mean we should not have a history that continues forward. Carrboro is about living and working locally. The other documents that I reviewed was the RTS report, the Local Living Economy Task Force report, Vision 2020, and the Keenan Institute Downtown Carrboro Market Analysis. All of these documents are supportive of these very concepts that I just ran through. We're very concerned about having an antidote to suburban sprawl. We know that having a vibrant downtown is what makes the difference to our local resilience moving forward during these tough economic times. We have a Carrboro resident who is a developer who wants to bring business to our downtown because he loves downtown. He loves Carrboro. One of the things that the financials did not really speak to is the multiplier effect, which some people mentioned pieces of, the jobs created and the fact that this is local business, expanding local business. Having been on the Economic Sustainability Commission, I've seen several businesses fail over the last 5 years. Several businesses that had to leave Carrboro, some of which needed to expand, some of which could not, had to fit into space that they really didn't match up with, but went into that space anyway and then failed. I really want to see that the folks who mentioned tonight that they have business, that they might be interested in being downtown, and those people who have come to us over the last 5 years and said, you know, I really want to get my startup happening downtown. How is that going to happen? So I'd really like us to be able to create space that does this. Simply put, if this rezoning is not approved, I fear we send a message to the business community that Carrboro is not open for business. And as much as, you know, we want to hold an event in February for the love of Carrboro, for the love of Carrboro, we really need to stand behind the project. Thank you.
Michelle. I appreciate people showing up too and expressing their opinions, and Ken for being very accommodating. And I think Randy's question about if not this, what is a really good question. And I also think that I don't really make decisions based on what ifs, and if not what then. I think we can be creative about what we want to have be in this space. And I agree with people when they say that this doesn't fit the character of Carrboro. Although I think Carrboro is changing its dynamic, we want to have a thriving downtown, we want to support our businesses, and we want to attract businesses. I'm not sure that the scale of this fits what we want and the character. And the thing that keeps standing out for me is the memo that Matt, the town staff, gave to us about the potential loss to the town each year of $13,500. So I'm not sure this project actually meets the goal of what we're saying, which is what that we want to diversify the tax base. There's a question about if there's going to be a loss annually to the town, which then residents might bear the burden of having their property taxes increase. So I don't really think this solves the problem of that. I'm concerned about the traffic and safety. I live right there, and although I don't think this project and Ken should be responsible for the traffic problems that are currently there, I do think that this will add traffic and that people will use their cars. And I also think that this, when we talk about the character, we might mean different things about it, and I do think that this begs for a discussion about what the character is now. And I really agree with Dan. I think that developers do need to have, and I know that Ken had several, I think three neighborhood meetings. But I think there needs to be some a more comprehensive process that happens now that involves residents when a developer wants to propose a project. Because it seems like, and this is my first meeting, it seems like from sitting on the other side that developers are often presenting plans without ever having had a conversation with residents that is about what they want to see there. It's more about the developer saying, this is what I'd like to put there. So I'm concerned about that process. So mainly given this question about if there's going to be a loss annually to the town, I am not in support of the project.
All right. You know, I feel like I'm sure many members of this board would agree with this. I feel like we're in a difficult spot in making this decision, and I think I feel particularly that way. You know, I don't live directly on Shelton Street, but it's part of my daily commute every day, and I own two vacant lots on Shelton Street. And the traffic impacts certainly concern me. Many of the speakers here tonight are my neighbors and my friends. Actually, many of the speakers are my friends on both sides of this issue. But, you know, I guess I feel like, you know, I was not elected to be mayor of my neighborhood. I was elected to be mayor of the town of Carrboro, and that I have to think about what is sort of what I take away as being what's best for our entire community. And while I agree with a number of points that critics of this project have made, I agree with. I also agree with most everything that Lydia had to say about it. And I think, you know, I almost disagree in a way with one of the key points that Jackie Tanner made. No, I don't mean to call you out, Jackie. No offense, but. I do agree with your conclusion that it's not likely to be a place where a lot of families with school children are likely to live. But, you know, there's a positive side. There is a positive side to that. And, you know, when you look at these economic analysis numbers, which I don't entirely agree with the staff's analysis of the project, but. You know, what is really costly from a tax base point of view is developments that bring additional children into our public school system. And I value children a lot, so I'm not I say that a little bit advisedly, but the fact that it doesn't bring isn't likely to bring, in my view, lots of additional children to the school system is actually something that benefits us on our county tax bills. And let me remind you that your county tax bill is about two-thirds of your entire tax bill if you live in the town of Carrboro. I think, you know, I feel like ultimately I ran and was elected to this board on a platform of saying that our community should carefully and thoughtfully grow up rather than out. And I think it's unfortunate that we're in this position where we're going to make a sort of very what's going to be a close decision both in terms of how this vote is probably ultimately shaping up, but also a close decision in terms of just where everybody's at in terms of what thinking about. That it presents difficult questions about what is really the best thing for our community. I do think that we get another bite at the if this is rezoned, that we get another bite at the apple in terms of determining what these buildings really look like, exactly how they're arranged on the site, many of the details of the development. I think there's a lot about the character of the development that has yet to be determined, and that it's this board that'll be in a position of making a lot of those calls. I value tremendously the character of the neighborhood that I live in, the character of our downtown overall, but I look at this site, I don't see this site as being surrounded by old mill houses. There are houses with a lot of important architectural character typical of the town of Carrboro that are adjacent to it on one side. But on three other sides, it's not that way. And so ultimately, I think where I'm coming down is that I'm saying I'm prepared to vote for this rezoning with every intention of bringing a really critical eye to the permitting phase when it comes to this proposed project here.
I would like to hear from staff exactly what it would require to assure that we, at least with my concern, for revisiting the aspect for assuring that the design is such that it could be more easily retrofittable towards commercial. Like, what would that take? And at this point in the process, to make sure that we don't preclude that.
Are you thinking in terms of like a condition that would speak to that?
Sure, yeah, condition, or like was done with item number 3, it was flagged to make sure that we could revisit it.
I think you would want to specify, if that is your interest. I mean, Mr. Ryder did indicate a willingness to construct the project in such a way that the back building could be could accommodate non-residential uses. I think you would want to specify a condition of that in that regard.
Right.
I mean, we.
Okay, so it would just be a matter of
we
that,
haven't
that condition.
Prepared one.
And Trish, I'm curious, does that, in terms of like the building design, does that actually have meaning, like, to you, say, as you review it? I mean, is there, you know, a certain building design that you would bring in that you would say, no, this couldn't be converted to commercial as opposed to, and what would that actually mean practically?
If you build residential to different standards than you do commercial.
It would be a construction issue, and also I think it would be, you know, as part of the conditional use permit, the uses that would be identified for the back building. I mean, currently the site plan, the concept plan has a summary description of the of both buildings, and it has it indicates that there's two floors of, you know, and there's a floor of retail and a floor of office in the front building, and then four floors of residential in the rear building, and so that would be that something other than that would be included on the conditional use permit plans.
Trish, if we were to add to condition 3, where it says these features and issues included are not necessarily limited to, you know, where he has and then at the end add and construction in the construct the back building in a way that would make a future conversion from residential to commercial
on the ground floor
more feasible on the first floor
on the ground floor.
If we added that to that condition, it seems to me that
addresses
it as something that would be looked at with particularity as part of the site plan review.
Well, if you want it to be, if you don't want it to be up, it would be a question. I'm not sure that would be the place to put it. I would suggest putting it elsewhere in a separate condition, because that section is about, that provision is about things that you are still going to decide on.
Okay.
Rather than something that you definitely want to have.
So a separate condition might be construction of the back building in a way that would make a future conversion from residential to commercial on the ground floor more feasible. Does that say?
Yeah, on the ground floor, including the parking, underground parking.
Mm-hmm. Below grade parking, yeah.
Including below grade parking.
Mm-hmm.
More feasible.
I mean, you could say the ground floor of the entire building.
Yes.
Of the entire building.
Kathy, are you getting this?
Yes.
Okay, so that would be condition 13.
Thanks.
All right.
We have to make sure that the applicant is comfortable with that condition, because it can't be unilaterally done.
Right.
Okay. He's nodding his head yes. All right.
Question for Trish. We have... five, I think, permitted projects right now downtown that have not begun yet for economic reasons. Is there anything that would prevent those projects, like a couple that Jack has permitted, from coming back to us and saying, I really want to decrease my commercial, I want to increase my residential, I want what these folks have? Is there anything that prevents them from doing that?
No, I mean, there's not. And we have had conversations with folks about at least one of those projects.
Okay.
In that regard.
Because it would be to their benefit to build more residential at this point than commercial. And that kind of undermines all of the deals that were made, all of the purposes behind the change in zoning. So we could end up through this project overall throughout the downtown losing more commercial space than we would be gaining. If I had a permit, I would definitely be here tomorrow morning to see too. And we are going to end up with very high density, just residential downtown, which maybe is what the majority of this board wants. I would like us, if we pass this, to have a serious conversation soon about our downtown neighborhoods, about the about how our downtown looks and what we want for that, and how we are going to protect the character of this town, which is the goose that laid the golden egg. So I'm worried that we're going to have a line at the door tomorrow morning.
No. I think if there's a precedent that this would establish, it is that we are continuing to insist on a commercial component in developments, but we see that differently. Would somebody like to make a motion for the resolution of consistency?
I'll make a motion for I'll move the resolution of consistency. It's attachment A in our packet.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for the resolution of consistency. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Nay.
The matter passes 4-3. Is there a motion for the zoning map amendment with 13 conditions?
I'll move.
Is it attachment 1?
Attachment B1.
B1.
Yeah, I'll move the ordinance amending the zoning map with conditions 1 through 13.
Okay.
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed?
Yeah.
No.
The matter passes 4-3. All right. I believe that finishes out our agenda. Are there any matters from the board on other matters we need to discuss? Anything from the manager? All right. If not, is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed?
Yeah,
matter passes unanimously.
Oh my God.